that he was distinguishing himself, and that Darius wanted to put him above all of the others. Now, one of the problems in both ancient kingdoms and governments today is that of corruption. Who can you trust? Who can you trust to keep things running and not, well, do something for your own selfish interests? Darius found in Daniel such a person. But the others were not happy about it. You know, maybe they were getting a little bit under the table for their jobs, for greasing the wheel, so to say. And with Daniel in charge and supervising them, you know, those things would soon be gone, soon be taken care of. And so, consequently, this is starting verse 4, the supervisors and satraps were trying to find some pretext against Daniel in connection with administrative matters. But they were unable to find such damaging evidence because he was trustworthy and guilty of no negligence or corruption. So these men concluded, we won't find any pretext against this man Daniel unless it is in connection with the law of his God. The second set of characters begins to be introduced, and their character begins to be revealed. No, they're in it for themselves. They're thinking only of themselves and what they could gain from their positions. And starting in verse 6, we can see another of their characteristics. So these supervisors and satraps came by collusion to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. To all the supervisors of the kingdom, the prefects, satraps, counselors, and governors, it seemed like a good idea for a royal edict to be issued and an interdict to be enforced. For the next 30 days, anyone who prays, and this word prays can be also translated petitions, anyone who prays or petitions to any god or human other than you, O king, should be thrown into a den of lions. Now let the king issue a written interdict so that it cannot be altered according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be changed. So King Darius issued the written interdict. Interesting that how when they come to the king, they say, all of us, supervisors, prefects, satraps, counselors, and governors. What does all mean? Inclusive? Are there any exceptions to all? There shouldn't be. So, you know, they're implying that Daniel too is suggesting that you pass this law, being one of the supervisors. So, you know, they're deceptive. A little deception doesn't hurt them if it'll help them get what they want. But then when it comes to, you know, what they want, they become very literal. You know, they emphasize the fact that a written law signed by the king or, you know, sealed by the king, signet ring, cannot be changed. So they're going to be a little loose on one side and very legalistic on the other side. They're willing to do whatever it takes to get whatever they want. You get to see a little bit of Darius's characteristics here as well. He's kind of caught in the middle. And maybe, you know, being the king, perhaps, well, we're not entirely sure whether this Darius is the same as Cyrus. Some commentators say yes, some others say no. But if they're one and the same, then Darius is Cyrus and is the new emperor of the entire Medo-Persian Empire. But in any case, you know, there's a lot of temptation for vanity and pride. And Darius falls to that temptation. He doesn't realize the conspiracy that's going on. The story gets back to Daniel in chapter 10, or verse 10, rather. When Daniel realized that a written decree had been issued, he entered his home, where the windows in his upper room opened toward Jerusalem. Three times daily, here's another example of three. Three times daily he was kneeling and offering prayers and thanks to his God, just as he had been accustomed to do previously. You know, in some of the stories that we might tell the children, we might say that, well, you know, when Daniel heard that this decree had been passed, he went to his upper room and opened the windows to pray. Well, that's not how exactly it happened. The windows were already open. In fact, he'd been doing this in his entire life. People knew, people could see what he's been doing. So it was no surprise that when this decree is passed, you know, he doesn't change his routine. Now, couldn't he have been excused for closing the windows for the next 30 days? Well, one would think so. So why didn't he do that? Or why didn't he stop praying for 30 days? I mean, you know, he's been praying his whole life, so hadn't he accumulated enough prayer points to go without prayer for the next 30 days? It's not what he does, because, and I think this is one of the purposes of prayer that we're going to get to, is to acknowledge that we're not trying to save ourselves, that we're dependent upon something and someone greater than us to save us. And for Daniel, it was his God. Now, the king could issue this decree. The king might have his life, at least in appearances, in his hands. But ultimately, Daniel knew that only God could take away his physical life, and that God could save him. And so he continues to pray. And so, in the next few verses, the officials who had conspired to get this decree passed, I mean, all they had to do was go out to the street, look up at the right time of day, and they see Daniel praying. So there was not, you know, not much of a conspiracy there. They go back to the king. It's interesting how they approach the king. None of this respectful, "Live forever, O king." No, it's just it's a very direct, "Did you not see issue an edict to the effect for the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human other than to you, O king, would be thrown into a den of lions?" And I'm sure the king was a little annoyed about what was happening. The king replied, "That is correct, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be changed." I mean, the king's wondering, why does he need to be reminded of this? He already knows that. But see, these conspirators are very, they're careful to make sure that the king has no loophole, no wiggle room in order to try to save Daniel. So they make sure that the king agrees that the law passed is indeed valid and that it cannot be changed. Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the captives," okay, a derogatory, insultive kind of way, "from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the edict that you issued. Three times daily he offers his prayer." Well, again, they're willing to stretch and bend the truth and to make things into a lie. Because although Daniel is breaking the letter of the law, his heart was not against the king. Yet, the conspirators make it sound like it's Daniel is rebelling against the king. And the king realizes what happened, gets very upset and tries to save Daniel. Tries to do all he can to save Daniel, but there is nothing that can be done, and I'm sure what happens probably is that by the end of the day, these conspirators return and say, "O king, there's this law, there's this Daniel, there's the lion's den. Why is Daniel still outside the lion's den?" And so the king has no choice but to follow his own law, takes Daniel, takes him to the lion's den, and throws him in there. And here we have the second petition in this chapter. The first petition, or actually this would be the third petition. The first petition was the conspirators to the king. The second petition was Daniel to his God. The third petition comes not from Daniel's mouth, but from the mouth of the king, King Darius. I kind of read here a prayer of Darius to Daniel's God. "Your God, whom you continually serve, will rescue you." Then a stone was brought and placed over the opening of the den. And neither the king didn't trust his men, they didn't trust the king. So they both get their signet rings and seal the stone over the lion's den so that nothing can change. Darius is unable to sleep that night. He fasts. And implied by that, in that culture, is that a lot of praying is going on. And so Darius is praying. He's petitioning. Then in the morning, we see that, probably know how the story goes. Daniel is still alive. He's saved from the lions. He's delivered. Now, in Daniel, he's the one that's respectful to the king. "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and closed the lion's mouth so that they have not harmed me because I was found to be innocent before him. Nor have I done any harm to you, O king." Daniel is the only one, really, that respects authority in this chapter. Both the authority of his God and the authority of his earthly king. And so the king is delighted and gets Daniel from the den, throws the conspirators and all of their families into the den. And then, starting in verse 25, King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and language groups who were living in all the land. "Peace and prosperity. I have issued an edict that throughout all the dominion of my kingdom, people are to revere and fear the God of Daniel." And this almost sounds like a hymn or a prayer of praise. "For he is the living God, he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His authority is forever. He rescues and delivers and performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. In this story, who slept well? There's only one person, I think, that slept well. Probably Daniel. Sure, the conspirators didn't sleep very well because they wanted to know Well, what's going to happen in the morning? Is Daniel's God that powerful? Is Daniel going to be saved? And then what's going to happen to us? Darius, well, his most trusted, his best administrator might not be alive in the morning. So he doesn't sleep. It's interesting that this story is almost about the faith of... It's about the faith of Daniel, but it's also about the faith of Darius, or at least the growing faith in Daniel's God. And we hear the king making multiple comments and multiple offering, shall we say, multiple prayers to the God of Daniel. And he's not sure, absolutely sure, that Daniel is going to be delivered, but he's pretty certain. So, what is prayer for? What does prayer accomplish? And on the other hand, what is prayer not about? There were three petitions that we saw. The conspirators to petitioning Darius, King Darius. Daniel offering petitions to his God. And Darius petitioning Daniel's God. Well, in the first case, conspirators petitioning Darius, it was about getting what they want. And so maybe that can give us an idea of what prayer is not about. It's not about getting what we want. Daniel to his God, it was simply about, I suppose you could say that all throughout Daniel's life, through his prayers, he had come to know God so intimately, so closely, that even a sentence of death did not cause him to fear. Daniel knew that God could be trusted, that God could be depended upon to deliver him, if that was how God was going to work. And so Daniel did not have to alter his routine. And that gives, I suppose, a suggestion for another reason for prayer, is to get to know God, to get to know His heart. And in Darius's prayer, praise, hymn of thanksgiving, we can see another reason for prayer. It's to proclaim God's character. It's to let the world know why God is worthy of trust, why God is worthy of dependence by us. Now, it's been said that the stories of Daniel illustrate the prophecies in Daniel. And I think this story of Daniel and the lion's den is a story of God's people throughout history. All throughout history, God's people have been persecuted by those who are against God. And so it's applicable. It was applicable back then. It's applicable today. And I believe it'll be applicable in the days to come. Honesty and integrity are threats to people who want to gather power for themselves, for self-centered power. And ultimately, I think this is one of the primary issues behind what we as Adventists call the Great Controversy. Self-centered power versus another kind of power. Those who seek power for themselves, I believe, seek to eliminate threats to their goal. And in the end of days, the showdown, I believe, is going to be on the question of power. It's going to be between the power of serving others versus the power of serving one's own self. And as Adventists and as people of prophecy, we often talk about the mark of the beast and of Babylon. And ultimately, I believe it comes down to that. You know, self-serving power, at least in my mind, is the mark of the beast. And so, those who want to serve others are going to be hunted symbolically and perhaps literally by those who seek to seek power for themselves. And efforts to destroy God's people will even appear to succeed and prosper. And there will not be any apparent way out. And so the question comes down to who or what do we worship when things don't look good? When the world is falling apart around us? When finances collapse? When perhaps we lose our jobs? When people accuse us of doing something that we did not do? Who or what do we depend upon? What do we trust to deliver us? What happens when everything appears hopeless? Can God still be trusted? Can God still deliver? And that story of Daniel in the lion's den answers for us that question. See, worship, I think, and I believe, is the salvation question. Who do we trust to save and to deliver? An observation is that we worship that upon which we depend and trust. Prayer is an indicator of that trust. And we, quote, pray to those things in which we depend upon to deliver us. If we trust money to deliver us, that's what we're going to, I suppose, pray, devote our time to. If we trust in our, I suppose, power over others, power and authority over others, then those who trust in that will pray and devote themselves to acquiring more prestige, more power, more authority, and so on. Our daily worship, our devotions, our prayers train us, I believe, to depend upon God in the small things. And as we pray, as we spend time with God, we have daily experiences with how God works. We get to know God. We get to know that God is worthy of our trust. And when we learn that, we begin to learn that we can trust God in even the large things. And so prayer is an avenue through which we learn and experience God's work in and for us. It's an avenue through which we get to know God's heart and mind and will. Question for us, question for me is, do I want to get to know God better? Do you want to get to know God better? Do we want to learn to depend upon Him more? And so, I encourage each of us to get to know God better through prayer, through regular times of prayer, through individual prayers, through praying with one another. And as we get to know God better, we'll experience the strength and the courage and the steadfastness that's required to withstand the storms that hit each of us in our lives.